Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Saturday, May 27th, 2017. It's just after 16 UTC as we're starting to record. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is not here again this week. Well, it's been a little while since he missed a show, but, well, not that long. But, you know, I actually had to reschedule first. I had something going on at our normal recording time, and we rescheduled to another time. And then when we got there, it turned out Yvonne couldn't make it after all because he was trying to get away for a vacation and was behind schedule, blah, blah, blah. So I have Jen with me again today. Hello, Jen.
Hi, Sam.
Jen has co-hosted with us a number of times before, and it's always good to have you on. You're definitely a change of pace from Yvonne. You're a little bit different.
I drop fewer F-bombs?
Slightly. Okay. You know, but... So, our agenda basically today, we are, of course, going to talk about all the Trump-Russia developments. How can we not? Then we're going to talk about Trump's international trip. And we will follow it up with a lightning round with whatever else Jen and I have that wasn't covered by the other stuff until we feel like we're done. And that's the basic plan. I don't know. Jen, you mentioned you are traveling right now. You normally live in Seattle, but you're traveling right now. Anything interesting going on?
I hate the Bay Area.
This is a theme in Jen's visits on our show. I think this has come up more than once.
Well, I'm here a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm here every few months for business, thankfully with my husband, so that we can hate the Bay Area together. And when I'm here, my allergies are awful. And even though actually some of my best friends in the world are here and I get to hang out with them and I love startups and it's a really fun scene, this is just weird and artificial and my allergies suck and everybody makes me cranky.
Okay. I can understand that. I've only visited the Bay Area maybe 2 to 3 times in my life, actually. And I think one was for a job interview in like the 90s. And the other two times were brief business related things. And I didn't really see anything other than like whatever meeting I was going to. So like I don't think I can claim to have ever actually visited the area in a way that I could like see it.
And the thing is, the area doesn't really suck. It has prettiness. It has, you know, and it's not like the people are stupid. Well, except that they are, but but fundamentally, it's you're sitting at a coffee shop. Your friend probably flaked on you because they had something better to do, because the flake rate around here is completely egregious. In Seattle, we just don't get together very often because we don't actually like human beings. But that's OK. At least I know I'm not sitting in a coffee shop like I was yesterday going like, hello, hello, are you there? Are you there? You know, mm-hmm. Oh, whoops, I had something better to do, you know. But and then you're sitting at the coffee shop, and if you eavesdrop on the conversations around you, which you can't help but do because people, I think, talk just loud enough that you can hear them because they want you to hear them. They're like, well, this is how the fundraising deck goes. And, oh, have you met this person? And, OK, so when we get back to the office, we'll deal with this JIRA item. And I'm like, I'm in a coffee shop. Go away. But the worst was yesterday. Because yes. I was working in a coffee shop. I was between meetings and in a random town, and I went to Phil's Coffee, the ultimate Bay Area, whatever the hell. And I had a family who decided they were going to take pictures of selfies of themselves. I guess they were traveling. Mm-hmm. In the laptop area where, quote unquote, the kids did stuff with their laptops. Now, I'm not a kid. I might be somewhat older than a kid. And I had these people like, I'm trying to do work and they're like sitting on my shoulder taking selfies. At that point, I just decided that I hated absolutely everyone.
Okay. Yeah. You sound like you're having a good experience and having lots of fun.
I fly home this afternoon. I'm really looking forward to it.
I guess I got two other things I will mention from my side on this thing. One, and I promise these won't go on forever, but I'll give my quick wiki of the day update. I last week thought that it was sort of topping off and slowing down. It really hasn't. I think what I saw was an artifact of me removing some additional robots that I'd identified. So it's still growing for some reason, linearly. Not exponentially, but it's just every It's just going up still. I still expect it to top off at some point, but so far not. At least for the popular variant, like I said last week, the other two variants are basically just me. Although they've actually ticked up slightly in the last week, but whatever. But the interesting part of that, again, is I mentioned how the popular version is sort of a built-in, like, identifying popular things that people might find. And that's definitely the case, because as I'm looking at the downloads I do get, they're not predominantly, like, with Curmudgeon's Corner, the downloads each week are predominantly the newest episode, because it's a current events podcast, and why the hell would you listen to something from, you know, weeks or months ago? Although I know you've done it, Jen. But with the Wiki of the Day thing, the predominance of the downloads are on two or three particular episodes that appear to be popular for some reason. So there's one from Indian movie, like this part two of some series, Indian movie. Justin Bieber is getting lots of hits. Bernie Madoff is getting a decent number as well. But it's like these handful of episodes that, you know, are terms that I guess people like to search on are getting the predominance of the download hits, not whatever's most recent at the time, which is just interesting. It's a different pattern, but I find it amusing to watch. So we'll see. And it's nice that it's still going up. But that's all I had to say about that. And then the other thing that I'll mention now on the show that it has been in a couple local news articles, so I figure I can mention it, is my wife is actually running for local office now.
Awesome.
So she is, and she's a first-time candidate, still figuring out what she's doing, blah, 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 but she's on the ballot for the local fire commission in our area. And the backstory behind that is that the incumbent in the position got in trouble a number of months ago for basically making racist jokes about Mexicans.
Whoa.
And it turns out, you know, the fire commission job is basically, a budget management type of thing. It's not, you know, running around to fires or anything. But she's running. There are five candidates in this race. It's normally the kind of race that, is not really disputed. But now there are five candidates in the race. There's a primary coming up in August. And then the top two, duke it out later. It's a nonpartisan position. But so we've been going through the interesting stuff of, you know, she's just submitted her voter pamphlet information yesterday, all of this stuff. And she's starting to, like, be at meetings where she's introduced as, like, a candidate, and interesting stuff to watch, the sort of internal process. And I mean, it's a local office. It's not like running for Congress or president or anything, but it's an interesting process to watch, like, well, what is actually involved in this? What do you have to do? How do you do whatever? And it's interesting that, you know, she's been working with a variety of organizations and doing some volunteer work. So she actually has, like, people who are, like, when she goes to these things are like, oh, we're very excited you're running, blah 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 blah. So it's weird. But so I thought I'd mention that on the show. I'm probably not going to have a lot to talk about it between now and when things happen there, but I thought I would mention it.
That's really cool.
So we'll see how it goes. And, you know, I've been telling her, you know, win or lose, it's going to be a very interesting experience. So
absolutely. Oh, and speaking of Brandy, please tell her I have not yet killed the plant.
Oh, excellent. We gave Jen a plant for her birthday,
which is just kind of cruel, but because I have the blackest thumb ever. But we haven't killed it yet. But I make Andrew water it.
There's a plant in my office right now that I'm staring at, realizing that it is heavily wilted at the moment and probably would like some water.
There you go.
So yeah, I should do that. Maybe in our next break, I'll water the plant real quick. But okay, with all that out of the way, let's take a break. We will be back right after this, and we will start talking about this week's Trump-Russia developments.
Blah.
Back after this.
You're in The Valley, AM 1620, and LiganairRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs.
Everybody's doing a brand new dance now.
Come on, baby! Let's do the twist.
Well, they got a new dance, and it goes like this.
Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LiganairRadio.com, The Valley.
Okay, we are back. Now, before we actually get on topic, there's one other thing that happened during the break that annoys me, and I'll mention. Well, first, I did water to plant. But also, the app that I use to sort of keep my notes for this show and for various other things is a Macintosh app called Simple Note. It's available on the Mac and the iOS, and there's a web interface to it too. And I've used this thing for years, and it's called Simple Note for a reason. It's plain text, no anything else. Just little text files that you can put stuff in, and it just syncs it so you can access it from all your stuff. It does what it does, and it's simple, and it works mostly. But in the last month or so, I don't know, they did an update, something happened, I don't know. The Mac version of it now for me crashes every single time I try to open the damn thing. Every time. So I'm forced to use the web version on my Mac. And that really pisses me off because, you can access all the same stuff, but it's a tab in my browser. And if I'm, I'm like to alt tab back and forth between things, and it's not where I expect it to be. And it's just annoying me. And it's like, okay, update this damn thing, fix it. I don't know what's causing it to crash every single time. At first, it was like crashing sometimes, but not all the time. But now it's like 100% of the time the stupid thing crashes. And so I'm really annoyed by that. I just wanted to get that off my chest. So if this continues, I'm going to have to switch to another note-taking program.
I would not recommend Evernote.
I've occasionally, every time I've looked at Evernote, I've been like, this is too cumbersome. It's got too much stuff in it for what I want. I don't know. Why don't you like Evernote?
Well, aside from the fact that the formatting is a cluster, you can't copy and paste to and from it. Like, plain text would be better than whatever the heck it does. So that's probably one of the worst parts. But also, there's different notebooks, and there's this, and there's that, and it's not the most intuitive UX.
Yeah, I mean, and I've found like some of these things they like, and I think Evernote is probably a perfect example of this. Tries to throw in everything. You can do clippings from here, you can do graphics, you can do this, you can do that, you can images, notes, you can take a picture and like make notes on top of it. All of this kind of stuff. And I really want something dead simple that, if I have something that I just want to scratch down so I don't forget it, I can throw it in there. I don't want to do formatting. I don't want to do, all this fancy stuff. If I want to produce something that other people are going to look at, I'm going to use something entirely different. I can understand maybe wanting to be able to drop an image in sometimes, but honestly, I haven't come up with anything where I really needed that in my use case for this stuff. I'm just taking random little notes here or there. I mean, the perfect example is the notes I take for this show, which is just, it's a plain text file that over the course of the week, anything that comes up that I'm like, this might be interesting to talk about, I'll throw one line into the document with, hey, talk about the developments with the census or whatever. And I don't need anything with all that extra weight on it. I want it to be on all my devices, so I do want synchronization, but that's about it. I want plain text and synchronization.
Right. Yeah, I don't know of anything offhand that does that.
There are a couple other programs. There's one I used before Simple Note, and there are a couple others in this space, but I'm annoyed just because I've used this one for years. It's always been working, and now it's broken, and I'm like, what? Why did you break it? you know, or maybe I just reached some sort of limit, like I've got too many notes or something, but it should tell me. It shouldn't just crash, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, so Trump, Russia.
Yes.
My bottom line on everything new we keep learning is just with every new revelation, after I've thought that I can't think this anymore, it's just sort of, they're even stupider than I thought last time.
How so?
Well, and I guess maybe it's just confirmation of the existing thought of stupidity, because I mean, my opinion of them is so low at this point, how could it be less? But like the biggest new thing in the last week is about Kushner, and Kushner potentially having additional meetings that he did not disclose on his forms, and that he went to the Russian ambassador and asked to set up a communication channel using the Russian equipment that they could use during the transition to talk to Russian officials, depending on who wants to talk about it, independently, secretly, back channel, whatever, which word you pick indicates some level of bias. But to me, maybe there's something that's, you know, fundamentally nefarious there, but I actually am coming more around to the idea that this, a lot of this is just complete and utter stupidity. I don't know. What are your thoughts, Jen?
I have to admit I'm fatigued on the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is it stupidity, or are they relying on our fatigue?
Right. Well, I mean, remember, a lot of this, the actual events happened months ago.
I find it really hard to believe that they would be that dumb, though. Like, and that so many of them would be that dumb. I mean, I guess that many people could be that nefarious, which is disturbing.
Well, you know, I think there's the most likely combination is that there are people who are doing things. Yeah, let's try to break them down. Like, I think from the top, I think Trump and Kushner are just dumb and inexperienced and have no idea what they're doing. So maybe let's give Kushner the benefit of the doubt and say he's just inexperienced and has no idea what he's doing. I think Trump is actually dumb. But then when you get to people like Flynn, people like Manafort, I think that there is an element that they're not necessarily dumb. So they know what they're doing, and they are, honestly, I think primarily it's about money and self-aggrandizement, as opposed to, you know, core ideological things. But I think those might play in as well. But I think it's, I don't know. I mean, I look at this and say, if they were trying, let's just talk about if there's, you know, the whole collusion thing, which I think is the sort of worst case scenario, but is actually kind of unlikely and not necessary for a lot of things that are just problematic anyway. If the Trump campaign and Russia were colluding all along, then this latest kind of thing is unnecessary. Why do you need to set up this new secret channel? Presumably you've already got communications that you're using all the way along. The fact that they're asking this kind of question in December is actually a little bit of indication that maybe there wasn't, you know, direct communication prior to that.
But why ask it at all?
Well, that's where the stupid, naive kind of stuff comes in. I think one of the clear themes of the Trump transition and the Trump administration is to not trust anyone that's not them. And so, first of all, having the incoming administration do that kind of communication prior to actually taking office is a little bit unusual. It's not unheard of. It has been done before. But, you know, it is a little bit unusual. But normally, you would do it through... You would either have the State Department help arrange it for you, or you would do it in sort of semi-open ways. But, of course... The Trump world doesn't trust anybody. They certainly don't trust the State Department. They don't trust the Obama State Department in specific. So they want to have conversations that they believe are not going to be listened to by the Obama administration. And so they want to set up another channel for the communications. And they may be like the story that's being put out there right now by people associated with Trump world is the goal of this was to set up a communication channel so Flynn could talk to various generals on the Russian side to talk about the situation in Syria and to talk strategy for things that they might do after the Trump administration was inaugurated. And okay, maybe they wanted to do that, but And just take it for face value at the moment, although there's some weirdness there anyway. But if they're going to do that, this is the way to do it to maximize how bad it looks.
Yes.
You know, and the normal way to do this would be to go through the State Department and say, hey, we want to have some conversations with our counterparts over there so that we can plan some things and be able to hit the ground running in January, blah, blah, blah. But if you fundamentally don't trust anybody in the Obama administration to do anything, then you're going to try to do an end run around them. And this is the kind of thing you get, but implemented extremely clumsily. I mean, apparently in this, the Russian ambassador, his report back to headquarters was incredulous. It's like, they're asking for this? What the hell is this? You know? And it never got set up or anything. Because everybody's just sort of looked at it, including the Russians, as this is weird.
They're not wrong. You know, going back to what you said about, you know, they don't trust anybody but themselves because they don't think anyone is trustworthy. I've been having a lot of, on a totally different topic, but management conversations about how people tell you what they want by projection. Mm-hmm. And so usually, and this was a theme that actually happened a lot during the debates, right? People would say, oh, he's accusing Hillary of this and that. And it's projection because he does this and that. Well, if you take that to the grander scale, if they don't trust anybody, is it because they're not trustworthy?
I think that one's a big duh.
Yeah, well, okay. Just, I thought it was, you know, brilliant, but apparently it was obvious.
Well, you know, the insight that it's projection, I think, is a useful one. And I think, as you said, you can sort of apply it. Time after time, it seems like Trump and his people do exactly that. When you listen to their criticism about somebody else, it almost always seems to apply directly to them. But yeah, I certainly think that if you've got a group of people who are fundamentally untrustworthy, of course they're not going to trust anybody else.
Yes, I have only been accused of lying by people who lie a lot.
Right.
Right. Because they fundamentally assume people are like them. I walk around a little Pollyanna-ish. I believe that people are really altruistic. And most people think I'm stupid for thinking that. But it's because I apply my own motives. Right. If I'm helping you out, it's because I want to help you out. Mm-hmm. And people have been like, why are you doing that? I'm like, because you look stressed. I thought so. Wait, what? You know, so you take that to these guys, and it's kind of frightening.
So, other things going on besides Kushner. Well, I guess a little bit more on Kushner. This was the big thing. They also identified a few additional meetings that he'd left off of his security form when he answered. He's also been identified as a person of interest in the investigation. So there's a lot of this sort of circles around him. And I've seen sort of speculation that, you know, basically, you know, it's, they're, you know, If they get Flynn, that'll lead them to Kushner. If they get Kushner, maybe that leads to Trump. Who knows? I don't know. And as I said on last week's episode, I would not be surprised at all if all of this sort of stuff was going around Trump, and Trump himself was just oblivious to everything, because he seems like the kind of person who might be. But I think a lot of it is also just, you know, they react in the way they react because of the trust issues we talked about, because of just no knowledge or respect for norms at all, let alone the law. And so, of course, they're just stumbling around, accidentally breaking laws left and right.
Yes, and these are the leaders of our country.
Indeed.
And what also is interesting about it being Kushner is the man has not said enough in public for us to have any real opinion of him.
Kushner. Yeah.
Yes, Kushner.
I mean, there's occasional things here or there, but you're right. He's fairly quiet. He's there. You get leaks about him being an influence in one way or another. And of course, he's been put in charge of a huge list of stuff. But yeah, he's not out there making speeches or anything. He's not out there giving lots of interviews. I don't remember a single interview, to be honest. I mean, I'm sure there has been at least one, but nothing particularly memorable.
Right. And I was actually surprised he had enough of a personality to suggest something as crazy as he did to the Russian ambassador.
Well, and the thing is, Flynn was at that meeting, too. So, like, you know.
So that might not have been Kushner.
Yeah, I mean, it's unclear where the idea came from. But also, you know, and I like to point out when it's not an original thought by me, but I've seen several people point out that, you know, if you try to say all of this is just about somebody who's naive and inexperienced and doesn't know what he's doing, all of that applies to Kushner, but not to Flynn. Flynn's been around. Flynn's done, you know, he's been in government. He's been involved in these things for a long time. He may also be stupid. He may also be craven in various ways, but he's not, you know, innocent and naive and doesn't know what's going on. So I don't know. I think it's easier to put it up to stupidity than just plain old inexperience. Because while they do have lots and lots of inexperienced people in this administration, they've got a few people who've been around and know what they're doing, who, at least in theory, could provide a steadying adult hand, except they don't listen to him. And I don't think Flynn is one of those anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it. I mean, Flynn, it's kind of mind-boggling. It's almost like he tried to be nefarious and completely failed.
Yeah. So you mentioned the fatigue on this. So just to explore that a little bit further before we move on to other things.
You realize that's kind of ironic.
Yeah, yes, it is. At this point, when you hear new stuff, is it just like, I don't want to know, give me another coffee? I mean, where are we?
I think it is. I mean, it's interesting because I don't necessarily use Facebook as my news feed, but I use it to kind of gauge where my various social groups are with thinking about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in the Rust Belt. So, actually not so far from where you and Yvonne went to school. So,
in Pittsburgh.
In Pittsburgh. Although I grew up in the steel country, you know, 45 minutes south, I had cows in my backyard. My grandfather was a steel worker, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have a conservative, you know, bunch on Facebook, as well as my, you know, wonderful liberal bubble that I enjoy so much. And I have very intentionally not unfollowed the conservatives, even though I wanted to throw my computer through a window sometimes at the crap they were posting. Of course, I'm sure they felt the same way about me and my feminist articles. But I've noticed that there's just less and less and less talk, except from the four or five people who have decided that the planet is on fire as a result of all of this and just post absolutely everything.
Right.
but it's not top of mind anymore. It's just yet more crap.
I definitely have maybe not quite to the degree you describe, but there's definitely a lessening. I mean, compared to, you know, October, November, and the immediate aftermath of the election, the amount of political discussion on, you know, that I see on Facebook has definitely declined. It has not gone to zero, though. I mean, I still see quite a bit of it. But I see a lot more other stuff and this and that. And I think the general concept of fatigue is definitely there, where people have invested emotional energy into this for months and they're just tired. And also, I think everybody is in their camps. Nobody is being convinced of anything. I exaggerate with nobody. There are some, you know, there are, of course, movements around the edges, and the polls have been moving up and down a little bit. I have to update my charts on that. But for the most part, when I do see stuff from Trump supporters, both on Facebook and Twitter, this is all bullshit. Why do they keep going on about this? They're just out to get him. Or every new story about Trump doing something is met by but Hillary did it too, or but Bill did it too, or something like that. So, yeah, everybody's in their camps, and, you know, the Trump people are defensive. The liberal people are sort of, haha, we got him now. But, you know, the reality of the dynamics of the situation are that you need a lot of stuff before anything actually moves anywhere significant. But in the meantime, we've got an incompetent administration who's not successfully doing much of anything.
Yes.
Which, you know, from the point of view of liberals is probably a big relief compared to what could be going on. And from the point of view of a lot of people, the idea of doing nothing is actually not that bad an alternative. But I think in the process of doing nothing, you're continuing to do all kinds of damage to sort of, the notion of truth, for instance, and all of this kind of stuff we've talked about before. It's just, it's depressing because with every new one of these headlines, you know, the, this isn't normal thing, comes up again, because in any regular administration, Republican or Democrat, going back decades and decades and decades, any one of the minor stories that have come up would be enough that people would be getting fired, and people would be, there would be potential charges, and there'd be congressional investigations up and down. And we see some of that, of course, but then we've got the administration going, whatever. They're all just out to get us. There's nothing here. And of course, I should say there's a rumor that as soon as Trump gets back from his international trip, there are going to be a whole bunch of heads rolling at the White House. Not necessarily because of these new revelations, but just because he's frustrated that things aren't happening the way he wanted them to. And so we'll see if anything happens. I don't know. I definitely understand the fatigue. But at the same time, you know, as a junkie for this kind of stuff, I'm still riveted to it. Every time there's a new day with headlines, I'm like, what did they do now? What's going on?
I'm more amazed that, I mean, I think that, so I follow Dan Rather on Facebook, and, you know, I'm starting to get the feeling that it's Chicken Little every time he posts, like, the sky is falling, right. This is gloom and doom. At the same time, he's giving me context, because the Nixon stuff went down the year I was born.
Right.
And that's how he sees it. That's how folks of his generation who are paying attention see it.
Right.
And yet we're not reacting the same way that we reacted back then. We're not saying this is clear abuse of power, et cetera, and so on. And that's a strange commentary on our society.
Although a number of people have pointed out, it took a long time, and it took until there was absolutely clear evidence that could not be refuted before congressional Republicans started to turn against Nixon. We had Democratic majorities in the Congress at that time, so they could be more aggressive in their investigations than is happening now, because the Republicans trying to slow it down or stonewall it didn't have enough of them to actually be effective in doing so. So things kept moving forward and forward and forward. And even at the time of impeachment, as many people point out, of course, he was not actually impeached. He got to the point where it was clear he was going to be, and then he resigned. But they still, they had enough Republicans to make it a bipartisan thing, but still half of the Republicans were still behind Nixon in Congress, and even more in the general public. If you looked at, days before Nixon's resignation, polls were showing that most Republicans were still behind him. It's a different situation, but I think a lot of it is, the Republicans are in power in Congress, so they can help set the tone in a way that they were less able to do before. And so they feel, I still think Dan Rather and other people who've said it have a very valid point. I mean, Yvonne and I said it last week and the week before, and it seems like going back forever, that you would expect a significant chunk of Republicans, maybe not all Republicans, but a significant chunk of them to say, I don't care if he's quote unquote on our side on issue X, Y, or Z. I don't care if he's got an R next to his name. This is wrong. This is right. Undermining our republic. And so therefore we're going to, do whatever we need to on this.
I mean, and the Republican Party is supposed to be the black and white Christian values party. If you really are all about values, you say, no, there's a line here, and your dishonesty and your shenanigans and your collusion crosses that line.
And we are certainly not there right now. I mean,
in that they're saying it, or in that they're saying it.
Some of them may be saying it privately, but they're very few that are even making noises. And there are a couple, Justin Amash, as well as your usual McCain and Lindsey Graham pair, they'll make noises. But they're not yet at the point where they're willing to do something based
they're
on those
still
noises.
In us versus them mode.
Yes, absolutely.
And not in right versus wrong.
And I keep speculating on this every week in terms of what they're afraid of in terms of their base, because I think it has to come down into the end of them being afraid of their base and being primaried or something like that, and that Trump actually is still really popular amongst Republicans and nobody wants to be the first one to stab him in the back, etc. Because from a purely practical point of view, again, like if they get rid of Trump, they've got Pence. How would Pence not be better for their agenda?
How is that not better? I know. I mean, it's not better for my agenda, but it certainly is better for theirs. I don't know. They must be. You've said this on show after show that they must be afraid of the voters, and I don't know. I just feel like, especially if you're campaigning on the religious right and on right versus wrong, letting public opinion sway you, just kind of shows me that you're not being honest about your beliefs.
The other thing that's occasionally been said, and I'll throw it out here, but I'm not actually sure how much I think this is a primary factor. I think that being afraid of the voters is a much bigger factor, is that some of the things that are potentially issues for Trump are things that would also be issues for quite a few congresspeople, honestly, on both sides of the aisle, not necessarily in terms of, the worst case scenario of sort of direct collusion with Russia, but in terms of shady financial ties in terms of making money off of the office, in terms of making political decisions based on the shady financial ties, things along those lines, that if anybody really started digging, they'd find a lot of that going on. And that makes a lot of people reluctant to push too deeply into it, because they would have to figure out a way to do it that they could sort of pin it on a few scapegoats without expanding it into a, you know, all of Washington is corrupt. What do we do about that?
Well, there's a reason Drain the Swamp was a big rallying cry.
Yes, absolutely.
The only difference between me and a Trump voter is that I absolutely knew that swamp was just going to get swampier.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, okay, there's lots of differences between me and a Trump voter, but we're not going to go into that. And also, though, I have to wonder if that's why we're coming down so hard on Russia, is because Russia doesn't, you know, so it's shady financial ties with Russia. So it's this happening with Russia, because most people aren't going to have that, you know, collusion with our former big bad.
Right. It might well be, because I've seen other things. Of course, Flynn has all sorts of ties with Turkey. There were financial connections there. There are potential connections with other Eastern European countries that have been talked about in terms of Trump. But if you go back to the very first week after the election, there were also conversations of, you know, Trump having conversations with foreign leaders in some South American countries, in some Southeast Asian countries, I believe, and in a few other places, where it's like, oh, wait, he had this conversation with the president there, and then miraculously, some sort of, you know, real estate deal that had been on hold for years, suddenly the wheels are greased and that's moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so I don't think it's all Russia. And I think if you had to put a single theme on it, my bet would be that, you know, money's at the heart of everything here. As opposed to something specific ideological. Although I don't want to discount the fact that it seems fairly clear that Trump and a lot of the people around him sort of, and ideology is the wrong word, but are sort of have an affinity towards the way that sort of strong arm dictator types run their countries.
Oh, yeah.
And you've heard Trump give praise to Putin and Erdogan, however you say it, in Turkey, and Sisi in Egypt, and what was the other one? The one in the Philippines right now. A bunch of these where you've clearly seen that sympathy, where, oh man, I like it that way. Why can't the U.S. be more like that? You know? And,
yeah.
And so there's definitely an alignment there too, which is one of the reasons that you don't necessarily need collusion, because there are aligned interests here anyway. And so it's quite possible that even without any collusion of any sort, you know, what Trump wants happens to be aligned with what Putin wants in certain types of issues. I mean, you know, and so his stance on NATO and all these other things, it's not necessarily Trump is doing it because Putin said to. Trump wants those things anyway. Their interests are aligned.
It's trendy for evil dictators.
You know, but yeah, so there's definitely some of that. But if push comes to shove, I think the money is the primary motivation for a lot of these people, including Trump, including Kushner, and that if on any of these investigations end up going anywhere, it's the money stuff that's going to be the key.
Right.
So, as it often is. Okay. I'm just going to bullet point a couple other things and then we'll take a break and move on, because we've been going quite a while.
Yes.
One is Trump lawyered up, and true to form, he picked a lawyer that he's worked with heavily before but has no experience in the actual matters that are potentially impacting him right now, and who works for a law firm who also represents Russian banks. There you go.
Just what? Okay, never mind.
I've mentioned last week, and I'll just throw out there again, the Louise Mensch being sort of a crazy nut job on some of these stuff. If you want to hear the fever swamp of, like, you know, things, she's the one to watch. But in the last couple weeks, it seemed like she's veered off even from, you know, completely unverifiable conspiracy theories about what happened behind the scenes to just stuff that makes no sense at all. Like, is a complete and total misunderstanding of how things work and what is going on. Like, she's mentioned the Supreme Court being involved in impeachment hearings, and because of an impeachment, Trump has been told not to use pardons, and none of this makes any sense whatsoever. It's just nonsense gobbledygook, which lends more and more credence to the idea that whatever the hell she's doing is an intentional misinformation campaign from somebody. And I suspect some of this is coming from the U.S. intelligence community, through indirect channels, but I don't know. But 'cause there's some things that are true interspersed with a lot of stuff that's pure rank speculation and things that now also things that are verifiably false. So it's not just, I speculate this is the case, but I have no actual proof that I can share, quote unquote, my sources told me, but things that are verifiably false. So anybody who's been paying attention to her, and I'm still following her, I'm still paying attention, just treat it with the appropriate filter. This is a stream of stuff that appears to be intended to make Trump look bad, which, you know, he does fine on his own, but a lot of this is just made up crap. So then we had this Hannity thing with this, the right has been going on about Seth Rich, this DNC staffer, who was murdered, and saying that he was the true source of the WikiLeaks stuff, not Russian hacking, and it's all a cover up unto his murder and blah blah blah.
This guy's poor parents have even been like, stop, please stop.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's no stopping.
And the way that Fox handled it was that they, like, let it go insane, and then they were just like, oh, we're sorry, tiny little retraction. Yeah, that's going to help a lot.
Yeah, this also appears to be a situation where there's no evidence that this was anything other than, you know, a mugging
Hannity
type. Hannity being insane and a regular, like, somebody got mugged and killed and it was a tragic thing.
It's a tragedy, yeah.
But not associated with any sort of grand conspiracy. Now, if real evidence comes out later, I'll suck it up and say, oops, I was wrong. But at the moment, people are going crazy over absolutely nothing. There's nothing there to be seen. And then another interesting part that came out this last week is that apparently there was a document that the intelligence community believes was fake, with basically showing a agreement between Attorney General Lynch and the Clinton campaign to go easy on Clinton on the email investigation. And the existence of this document was one of the factors that caused Comey to decide to, when he put out his statement saying we're not going to press charges against Clinton, she was irresponsible, but there's nothing illegal here that we can press charges on. This was one of the reasons why he made the decision to do that himself rather than do it through regular channels, including the Justice Department, etc. And all of this may be because of a forged leak document that was also Russian disinformation. And if so, it succeeded in changing how the FBI director approached this investigation from the beginning, which had ramifications that go all down the line. So it's just another interesting wrinkle in this whole mess. And the very last thing, I promise, before taking the break, is that if you try to game this through in terms of what would the Russians want out of this? And, you know, do they want, you know, Trump as a Russian pawn or whatever? That's probably not actually it. The most successful thing to them is probably not having Trump directly as someone they can call on the phone and say, do this tomorrow. But instead, to basically wreak havoc with, you know, the world's faith in the U.S. as a power they can trust, the American people's faith in their own institutions, etc. And if so, if that was the goal all along,
they're succeeding.
They've been wildly successful, and every new development here leads further to that. And in fact, one of the things that was in every article about Kushner and this thing with the Russian embassy and the secret channel is that also the Russians know they're being monitored, so maybe the Russian ambassador reporting home about this was all part of a disinformation campaign too. And so everybody mistrusting everything as, oh my God, how do we know what's really true? How do we know it's not? Oh my God, it's the Russians everywhere. Oh no, this is this and the, yeah. And so if there was a goal to destabilize American institutions and reduce faith in American influence in the world, etc., it has succeeded beyond anybody's wildest hopes.
Yay.
And with that, let's take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk about the overseas trip. Back after this. Hey, we know when you listen to this show, you have thoughts about what we say. You probably want to vent about what we got wrong or what we left out, right? Or maybe you want to suggest some future topics we just haven't gotten to yet. Well then, tell us all about it. Right now, there are 4 ways to get feedback to us. First, you can go to the Curmudgeon's Corner Facebook page and leave comments on the post where we announce all the new episodes. Second, you could go to curmudgeonscorner.com, that's with a hyphen, and leave a comment there instead. Third, both Yvonne and I are on Twitter. You can talk to me at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E, or Yvonne at I-M-B-O-U, I-M-B-O-U. Finally, if you don't want to make your comments in a public forum like that, just email me directly at abulsme@abulsme.com. Again, that's A-B-U-L-S-M-E. But, you know, if you don't want us to mention your feedback on the show, be sure to say so, because otherwise we're probably going to respond to your comments on a future show, because, you know, that's what makes the discussion. Thanks, and we look forward to hearing from you. Okay, we're back. So, Trump went on a trip.
Yay.
No. You know, honestly, it's been... I mean, there's certainly been a number of little news stories coming out of it, but it's gone actually fairly smoothly. I mean, there haven't been any major, major disasters. Trump has been Trump. I mean, you can't say anything else besides that, I guess. But, I think all of the areas where he's snubbed people, the people being snubbed are adult enough to sort of respond to it in a way that's non-escalatory. And so you have, you know, hey, he's had a trip. It's been a success. Yay. He's coming home. Meanwhile,
the success being that we're not in an active war. I mean, I'm just not super clear as to what's been successful.
Well, according to Trump,
because I believe everything that man says.
He's made deals that will result in millions of new jobs and billions of dollars added to the American economy.
And monkeys fly out of my butt.
So most of the stories that have come out of this have not been particularly substantive, but instead have been things like Trump shoving the prime minister of Montenegro. Trump and Meliana holding hands or not. Things like that. I know you had some thoughts on some of those. So
the two you brought up are interesting because I believe those are kind of non-stories.
They are, I think.
Because the Trump and Melania thing with her being unwilling to grab his hand was her understanding the protocol of the country that they were in.
Oh, okay. I haven't heard this spin on it. Say more.
That she was walking behind him and not touching him, et cetera, because that is the proper way to behave.
Okay.
Where they were. And also, I've seen the video, and I didn't feel like the slapping away his hand was with malice or anything, right?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not holding your hand right now. I'm not walking, you know?
Right. And that's one thing that I thought was also potentially You know, if you took random videos of me and my wife, you know, you would easily be able to find moments like that and yes. pick them out, and you would be able to find other moments that look differently. But, you know, I think these moments are being played for the comic value and sort of played for the leading into the narrative that Meliana is desperately unhappy and would probably be divorcing this man if he wasn't president right now.
Well, someone told me this week that this is completely unfounded, but the fact that the rumors have gotten like this, somebody told me this week that the divorce papers were signed but not filed, she has them.
I have heard that rumor as well.
And I'm like, I think that I wish we would tell real stories of real corruption and real problems more than we would tell this whole, like, his wife doesn't even like him. I'm like, can't we be better than that? Can't we just let these poor people alone, you know?
Yeah, because even if it's true, you sort of, okay, you feel sorry for her for a bit, but, you know, she's...
She chose to marry Donald Trump.
She chose to marry Donald Trump, and she could leave. But again, yeah, it has, in the overall scheme of things, this doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The only way it matters is if she's got evidence that she's going to spill if she gets divorced. But
and I don't think that would happen either. I think we need to leave these stories alone. Of course, now you and I are talking about leave them alone. So yes. I'm no better than anybody else at this point.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, what has gotten the attention, and this goes for all of the Trump stuff. So I'll expand it out. The stuff that gets the attention is the stuff that is gossipy. Oh my God, I can't believe that's happening. Like, this spy stuff going on. This stuff in his marriage going on. Oh, look, he was rude to that guy.
The P tapes.
Right. Whereas, you know, things like, you know, the petty corruption of him pushing money into Mar-a-Lago every other weekend, you know, it's like, oh, okay, whatever.
Well, I see a lot about that. I see almost weekly reports of expense, and recently $35,000 on golf carts.
Yeah,
and,
to be clear, yes, I have seen those reports. That's why we're talking about you. You see the reports all the time, that's not the stuff that people are getting all hyperventilated about. It's right. sort of like this businessman-like reporting on, okay, every week let's document the stuff that's going on in these areas. But that's not the area that people are jumping up and down with pitchforks saying we have to do something about that. For that, it's Russia, 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 Russia.
But, we're not going to talk about Russia, 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 yeah. Russia again. But, So, up to the shoving of the Montenegrin dude.
Yes.
Apparently, Spicy indicated that they had assigned seats or assigned places to stand.
Yes.
So, again, I kind of feel like, yes, Trump is a bully who literally throws around his not insignificant weight. But it's not necessary. It's his being an idiot, not his being.
Right. I mean, it's
anything
not,
else.
It's not a. Yes, he was supposed to be in a certain place for the picture. It's not about the fact that he got himself to the front to take the picture. It's right. that the way he did it was rude.
Oh, really? Trump was rude? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but what I find interesting about the international trip is the commentary on Trump as odd man out, you know, mm-hmm. waiting, not taking the walk with the rest of the leaders, but waiting for the golf cart. When he was browbeating everyone about needing to pony up for NATO, apparently there wasn't any nodding in the crowd. When he would say something stupid, even his own people would forget to watch their body language sometimes.
Yes, there was a great clip of, and there are several examples of this, but he came from Saudi Arabia to Israel and was giving a speech, and he said something like, and I've just left the Middle East. And one of, and of course, Israel is part of the Middle East, too. And one of Trump's staff just visibly face palms. He just goes, slaps his forehead.
I think that actually happened in real life. And it actually happened in real life. Like, who actually, I thought things like head desk, you don't actually hit your head on your desk or face palm. I mean, who actually face palms? This guy actually face palmed.
Yes. I've done both of those things, by the way.
Usually I put my hands down before I hit my head on the desk, because otherwise, ow.
Yes, agreed. Like, I've never done this. I've never done either a face palm or a head desk without thinking in my mind, I'm going to face palm now, or I'm going to head desk now as a show for somebody.
That's it's not
necessarily something I would do by myself.
Like, it was like, you know, it was the physical expression of an
Yes. So anyway, yes, his staff is also getting to the point where they just are openly showing this in some cases.
I also saw, and this is, of course, wandering a little bit away from the topic, but you know, what the hell. But I also saw something that compared his language and how he speaks now to a year ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is, of course, feeding into all of the, you know.
Not just a year. The one I saw was a comparison going
one in the 80s or something.
Yeah, there was one going back sort of decades, looking at public appearances where Trump was speaking extemporaneously, so not from prepared speeches, going back to the 80s and comparing and showing that there's a dramatic difference in terms of the way in which he speaks. That back in the 80s, he actually did speak in complete sentences. He used dependent clauses. He used multisyllabic words. He would actually speak in paragraphs, where you had a coherent set of thoughts that played out over the course of several sentences. And most of that is now missing. And some speculation in terms of, you know, is it, you know, early signs of dementia? Is it just normal aging? Or is it an intentional strategy to speak to his perceived audience?
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
It's an interesting analysis either way. Like, I don't know either which of those things it is. I think I would be shocked if it's the intentional strategy one, though. I think most likely it's normal aging, to be honest. But you're taking a man who is never all that bright. And if he's deteriorating, the position he's in right now is he is fairly dumb and easily manipulated by those around him. And he's got a bunch of people around him who are up to no good.
Which is sad.
Yes. I mean, at least when we had a deteriorating Reagan, we had, I mean, you could argue that there were people up to no good around him as well, but at least the people around him seemed to be relatively smart and had an agenda, and you may or not have agreed with that agenda, but, you know, there was something there. It seems like now you've just got a bunch of grifters around him.
Yeah. Yeah.
What other conclusions can you draw from this trip?
We shouldn't let him out again.
Now, there's been commentary, though, that he seemed to have enjoyed this trip, so maybe there'll be more of them.
I'm hard-pressed to care. I still keep wondering how this version of me landed in this version of the multiverse. Like, did I really have to be the person to deal with Trump as my president? You know, I just sorry.
Yeah. The only other things to say about the international trip, I guess, are one, he made sort of the big push towards Saudis, in terms of, yes, these are the ones we're going to work with a lot, and yes, Iran is bad, and blah, blah, blah. This isn't that much of a change from previous administrations, but he does seem to have pushed it a little further in that direction than his predecessors, which, again, you know, it's weird hearing the dichotomy when he's, you know, slamming Iran for XYZ, all of which Saudi Arabia does just as much or worse. Meanwhile, praising Saudi Arabia for things that they're not actually all that good at. I don't know. It's just, I understand there's sort of a strategic realpolitik type of thing going on here where we've decided that the, you know, the ally we can work with to push forward our objectives, whatever those objectives may be, is Saudi Arabia, not Iran, and Iran's our enemy for these purposes. rather than making any of these decisions on sort of objectively which government more aligns with our values or anything like that. But still, it's kind of disconcerting to see.
It's like, hey, we have more money in Saudi Arabia. And, oh, hey, people will be less pissed off at us if we keep going that direction. So, yeah, let's keep going that direction.
Including, of course, Trump properties, if I remember correctly.
Well, why else would we go that direction?
And then, Trump's visit to NATO, he also alienated is the wrong word. He doubled down on this. All the NATO people have to pay their 2%, which
right.
Indeed many of them have not been paying. But he again put it in language of paying your dues and that kind of thing, which is not how it works. It's allocating a certain portion of your GNP towards defense.
Right.
And the reason nobody nodded, nobody clapped is because he is violating sort of the international consensus of how this stuff works going back forever. I mean, Obama also asked, hey, you guys need to step up and pay your 2%. But the thing that seems to be lost here is that this isn't a matter of, the U.S. pays for NATO's defense and gets nothing out of it. The U.S. does get stuff out of it. The fact that the framework of NATO existed lends a certain amount of stability to Europe that would not exist without it. We get indirect benefits from having a Europe that is Western focused is unified and not clashing amongst themselves, et cetera.
You realize that is entirely too subtle for Trump.
Yes. And I mean, the same goes for all the EU stuff as well. It's the same idea that by having all of these countries together within a framework, A, it sort of keeps them on our side of the fence as opposed to, the Russian sphere of influence. But B, the history of Europe going back centuries was war after war after war after war within Europe. The post-war order that was put together after World War II has largely prevented that for 70 some years.
Right.
Which is a major accomplishment, one would argue. But if you're coming into this saying, there's no value behind any of this, NATO's stupid, the EU's stupid. Well, I am not saying you necessarily go back to France and Germany going to war, but you're eliminating a lot of the protections and systems that stop tensions from rising amongst these countries.
Right.
Anyway. Okay, enough about the foreign trip. Do you still want to do a lightning round? We've been going a while.
I could do it for a bit longer before I have to go pack.
Okay, we will be back after this, and we will do a quick lightning round until we peter out. Back after this.
Facebook, Facebook, Facebook!
Hey, do you want to help support Curmudgeon's Corner? Well, right now, the best way is through Facebook. If you haven't already liked us on Facebook, and you actually, like us, then go search for Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook and like our page. It will help you see when we announce new episodes, and it'll help us reach more new people too. If you like a particular episode, like our episode announcement post too, or share it with your friends. All of this helps spread the word about our podcast to more people who might like it as well. And of course, we love having a conversation with all of you listeners, so please use Facebook to leave comments on the shows, give us suggestions, or anything else like that. It's always great to hear from you. So, if you want to help the show, use Facebook. Or forget all of that and just send us money.
Okay, we are back. And before we get into the lightning round, I just wanted to mention, some of you may be hearing background noise behind Jen, and I meant to mention this at the beginning of the show. But as we said, Jen is traveling. She's in a hotel right now. And so there are background noise. Where exactly in the hotel are you? You're like in the lounge?
I'm in the lounge because the little carrels they have to take calls were all occupied.
Mm-hmm. And so you've got music behind her. There, you can hear people every once in a while. You can hear dishes rattling periodically. Yeah, yeah, I know.
Sorry.
You know, Yvonne couldn't make it. Jen could. I'm not going to complain too much. And it's honestly not that bad. Okay. Like, we have had episodes. Like, there was one episode a few months ago where Yvonne was at his brother's house. And his brother was making all kinds of noise in the background, like, throughout basically the whole show. And so this is much better than that.
Oh, that's good, because I remember that show.
Okay, so lightning round. Why don't you go first?
Oh, boy. That means I have to actually look at these topics, huh?
Uh-huh.
So one of the topics we had on here was my feedback.
Yes.
Which was, hey, every time you make the, I don't remember exactly what I said. I don't have it in front of me, but it was, hey guys, every time you say, well, then people just won't have healthcare and then sign up later because the penalty is not bad. I'm like, you mean men.
So
because women's health is held hostage.
So I'll respond to that a little bit. First of all, yes, absolutely valid point. However, it does give a certain, there are a lot of women that if the healthcare was not given through an easy, direct way, would indeed choose not to have healthcare and would take the consequences thereof. Even when healthcare is available, you see that. And it's somewhat a class thing, I think. But, you know, you do have a significant portion of the American population where, by default, they're not making sure that there's birth control always available. They're not doing the routine women's health care that is recommended and that everybody would hopefully get. I think you're right that there are far more women that would feel sort of held hostage than sort of the young men who are like, whatever, blah. But there still would be a significant number of women, I think, who would just not bother. And there would be certainly consequences to that decision, but I think that's out there too.
I just, the influence of possibly getting pregnant on your healthcare decisions and having to bear the burden quite literally
is significantly larger. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And that doctors hold prescriptions hostage to regular visits just drives me completely insane.
Yes. And I don't know how much of that is directly doctors making that choice and how much there are rules surrounding that kind of stuff. But yeah, that,
true.
I think you're absolutely right. That is a much greater weight. And that's a very valid point. But there are a lot of women out there who would just say, I'll deal with it when I get pregnant.
Yeah, at that point, it's kind of head desk moment for me.
But you don't do that. We just went over that.
Well, I didn't actually slam my head on the table in front of me.
I want to hear a clunk.
I can. No, I'm just going to say no at this point.
Okay. So I guess my next one then for my turn is the search for a new FBI director has been a little bit interesting. And we've had a few abortive attempts, I guess. There was the trial balloon of Merrick Garland as the new FBI director, which a number of Republicans raised ostensibly as, okay, you couldn't have him on the Supreme Court. How about FBI? Would that make you guys happy? And of course, the trick is there that you move him out of a federal judge position that's for life into an FBI position where he could be fired at will by Donald Trump. You know, for doing anything. So it's not necessarily a good trade there. And so that, you know, was pushed by a number of Republicans and then died quickly. Then the other name that's come up a lot was Joe Lieberman.
Oh, wow.
Former Democrat who went independent when he lost a primary and aggravated a lot of Democrats for being essentially the most conservative Democrat in the Congress for a while. And a number of people pointed out or reminded me something that I didn't remember at all. But apparently he was instrumental when we were having the Obamacare debate in 2009 in killing the public option. Like the initial drafts of Obamacare included a public option, and Lieberman was one of the key senators involved in making sure that did not make it into the final bill. And Lieberman was reportedly the Trump's top choice for a while, but he took himself out of the mix when it was announced that Trump was hiring. See if I can get this right. Lieberman's law firm was also involved in defending various Trump interests in the past that might have a conflict with the Russia investigation. Lieberman actually took himself out of contention. And it's unclear at this point who the front runners are. Before the international trip, Trump had said he hoped to maybe announce a FBI director even before he left. By the time he got there, it was clear that that wasn't going to happen. It seems like he's basically reset the search. Like all of the initial people he talked to have been disqualified or are out for one reason or another, and he's starting over. So who knows who the next FBI director is? Another part of what was being reported, of course, there is just like he was asking Comey about loyalty. Loyalty to Trump is apparently a major factor in his decision on who he might nominate to FBI director or any other position for that matter. And so that's coming up as an issue since any FBI director at this point, part of what they will have to look at is the ongoing investigations into the Trump campaign and the Trump administration. So
every time I hear loyalty, like my eyes roll massively. It just feels like such a heavy-handed, what are we in the Godfather thing?
It's all about loyalty.
Again, eyes rolling.
Okay, your turn.
Let's see. We didn't talk about Manchester.
No, we have not talked about Manchester.
And it kind of feels like something that is important enough to mention.
Yeah, I mean, I generally, when these go by with Yvonne and I, there's oftentimes it feels like there's nothing to say. I mean, you can say, yes, this happened. It's awful. But where do you go beyond that? I mean, is there an action item we should be taking from this? I'm not sure there really is. If you start reacting directly to these as opposed to looking at, the bigger picture, I think you end up making bad decisions. It does look like it was at least an ISIS-inspired person, maybe directly an ISIS-organized person this time. There's some evidence that he had traveled to various countries to interact with ISIS. It looks like this was not a single person operating this time, but it was once again a group of people doing this intentionally. And there have been a number of arrests above and beyond the bomber who blew himself up, of course.
Hard to arrest him then.
Yeah, hard to arrest him. This is also notable because it targeted kids, basically.
Yeah, it was targeting little girls.
Yeah.
Effectively, that I felt like was a mentionable change.
Yes, I've mentioned before my cousin Heather Herbert. She tweeted a number of things on this that there does appear to be a distinctive ISIS strategy in some of their recent statements and documents, basically saying, target women and children. And this may be one of the, it's happened before. I shouldn't say one of the first. It has happened before. But this does seem to be a case where it's specifically that, I guess it's Ariana Grande, who I guess I hadn't actually heard of before. Maybe I'd heard the name, but I wasn't aware of this person. But apparently a musical act, a woman singer, whose primary audience is... preteen and young teen girls. Do I have that correct?
I believe so. Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah, it was a concert of these people, and a lot of the dead and wounded were young girls. And it seems like that was very intentional. And it does get you, like, at this point, we're almost like, I don't know. I still get more emotionally affected when it's the kids. I mean, and I shouldn't be, because it's just as bad when you blow up adults. But, you know, there is a certain additional
impact. I think we also react to the loss of potential with kids.
Right.
It's this, they had their whole life in front of them. It's why it's so much more tragic when a, 20-year-old dies than an 80-year-old dies, or, keep going with that.
Right. But. No, I think you're right there. The one additional thing that came out of this was there was a brouhaha that went on for about 24, 48 hours, where the Trump administration apparently leaked the killer's name before the British authorities were ready to release that information, which potentially impacted their further investigation because they were trying to round up anybody else who was involved in this. And so releasing that name early potentially had a negative impact. And so they temporarily suspended sharing of intelligence information with the U.S. It only lasted about 24 hours. It has been resumed after the U.S. administration made the appropriate noises about, we promised to do better. This is similar to apparently the Israeli reaction when Trump leaked the information from the asset that the Israelis had within ISIS last week.
I'm sensing a trend there.
Yeah, definite trend.
Yeah. And I know that Ariana Grande herself came under some criticism because she flew home really rapidly. And people were like, well, you could go visit the victims and things like that. People sometimes forget that she herself is only 23 years old and in no way, shape or form had the emotional maturity to deal with this happening at one of her concerts.
Right. I mean, everything you saw out of her from her Twitter feed and everything else, it just that she was completely and totally shaken by this as well. I mean, even though she wasn't hurt, she wasn't near the actual explosion. But yeah, she was deeply affected by this. She canceled her entire tour. I mean, I'm guess they're going to probably reschedule various things, but she was in no state to do anything.
No. And yeah, I agree. It would have been nice for her to visit her fans who got hurt. But as I said, and honestly, you're in your early 20s, you just don't have the emotional.
Yeah. And she still may. I mean, she probably will, I would guess. But she needed some time.
I can't say that I blame her. I really can't. I'm not saying I love her music, but I'm saying that, like, in the grand scheme of things, I'm going to give somebody in their early 20s a pass for freaking out at a terrorist attack or at a concert.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. My turn. I've mentioned this the last couple shows, but we've never talked about it. There was this big ransomware attack. They had I guess it exploiting a flaw in Windows SMB, this file sharing in unpatched systems or really old systems like XP that had not had a patch issued. But if you had a fully patched up-to-date system, you had no issues whatsoever. But if you were more than a few months behind on your patches, you were vulnerable to this. It's one of these typical ransomware attacks. These have been growing over the last few years, where basically your computer gets taken over, you get a message that says your hard drive has been encrypted, everything will be deleted in X amount of time unless you give us this amount of money in Bitcoin. In this case, it was $300 worth of Bitcoin that was wanted as the ransom. Apparently, the people who are doing this have managed to net somewhere around $50,000 out of this. endeavor at this point, which is, you know, not nothing, but isn't huge either in the big picture.
They were probably envisioning more.
Yeah, but I don't know. This is the biggest one of these so far. What do you think?
Use a Mac.
There haven't been one of this particular kind of attack on the Mac side yet, I don't think. At least
and
no
I realize
ones.
It's yet, right?
It is yet. It is yet. I mean, these kind of vulnerabilities exist in all systems. It's just the Windows systems are particularly known for having holes and known for being targets. So lots of people have done this. Oh, I should also mention this particular exploit was one of those revealed in a leak from the NSA a few months back. And so this exploit was picked up from there and utilized. And because the exploit was revealed there, it basically laid out an instruction book for anybody who wanted to do this. So if anything, it's a surprise it took this long. Your government dollars at work. Yeah, because, you know, the argument here is NSA was, like many other intelligence agencies across the world, is stockpiling these so-called zero-day exploits for their own purposes rather than just revealing them to the vendors so they can fix these issues quickly. And which leaves everybody vulnerable. And yes, it does potentially give NSA a backdoor into all kinds of computers they might be interested in across the world. But there's a distinct trade-off here. If you've got a big organization full of experts trying to find these sort of exploits, I think it's an open question how you should react to that. Like, my tendency is that NSA technically has a dual role. They have the offensive role, but they also have a defensive role. And I think that's being neglected. The right way to deal with many of these is get them patched as quick as you can. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. They're, you know, you may be giving up some intelligence assets from that, but you're defending yourself from exploitation as well. And with the kind of, and in the end, I think defense is going to be incredibly important in these kinds of issues as these sort of computer security issues get worse and worse every year. At some point, we're going to have to realize, you know, we have to put a lot of effort into the defensive side of this, not just into figuring out our own exploits, you know, to do other things. But even aside from NSA doing anything, the patch was out for months. Update your damn systems.
Well, you know, that's tough to do sometimes for Windows, especially these days, because Microsoft has decided that they want to spy on you, right? And and they want all your system information. So if you're even a little bit concerned with your privacy, you don't have auto updates turned on because they're going to, you know, turn on all the stuff you don't want.
Well, and also, some of the systems that were affected here are ones that are legacy embedded systems of various sorts. There might be software dependencies that are reliant on the older version, and you don't know if the update's going to break things, and you don't have the resources to fix things. And so if you're running a system, a critical system at a hospital, and that's where a lot of these hit in the UK, that, you know, runs your MRI machine or something, you're not necessarily going to be yourself in the hospital running the weekly Windows update to make sure it's up to date, because what if that thing breaks your goddamn MRI machine?
Right.
You know, so you're going to wait until the MRI vendor has validated things and does their once every 3 years update, if they even do the update at all, because if it's not broken, don't fix it mindset is very strong. And if you've got, and let alone if it's something like, an ATM that's only programmed to call home to get updates on how much money it has and things like that, maybe even more so, or who knows what other kinds of devices, because a lot of this is indeed like not people using Windows as their desktop operating system, but devices and systems that were sold as a unit that happened to use Windows under the covers.
Right.
So it's actually not as simple as just everybody update all your shit. But as this stuff gets more and more prevalent and it gets easier and easier for people to do, so that you have the script kiddies doing all kinds of damage, it becomes more and more important to, yes, figure out a way to make sure that despite all of those obstacles, you're still updating your shit all the time, because otherwise there's an even bigger risk.
Yep. Yeah. Computers suck. What can I say?
Okay. You want to do one more?
I'm pretty much at the end of my list. You got another one?
Sure. Let's do, which one do I like here? I guess this is somewhat related to the previous conversations, but the big leak that, Trump, you know, gave away about the ISIS person to the Russians, etc., was related to the intelligence that is having officials seriously consider, they have not pulled the trigger on it yet, but seriously consider pulling the trigger on disallowing electronic devices in the cabins of all international air flights, and potentially domestic eventually, not just, you know, targeting specific countries, but just saying no electronic devices.
What kills me about that is that you're allowed to bring your phone, but not your e-reader.
Yes. Well, you're right. I should say they're talking about devices above a certain size at this point.
But here's the thing is that I have a Kindle Oasis and I'm a bookworm, and it's not appreciably small. It's not appreciably larger than a lot of people's phones.
Right. But they don't have, yeah. But right now it's by class of device. I could see them doing it by, like, you know, your device must fit in this box or something like that.
I still just, this whole thing is, it's that whole, I don't know. I don't love all of the restrictions, period. Yeah. You know, I am very much one of those people who would trade some safety away so that I have better freedom.
Yeah.
In a heartbeat. And so here I am again going, like, I understand that, you know, airplanes aren't exactly, you know, good old U.S. soil or anything where you can expect that kind of freedoms. And we do have to have regulations in order to keep the peace and keep the planes in the air. But come on, you're expecting, you know, I have to go to India. And at first I was like, okay, then I'm not going to. Okay, I was originally going to fly through Dubai. Well, okay, I'm not going to fly through Dubai because I can't keep my laptop or my Kindle, which is the one that really kills me. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh, well, it's going to be such that you can't fly anywhere. And I'm like, I have to take an 18 plus hour in the air trip with nothing but my phone.
Right.
Like, you have got to be kidding me.
And I think the key is what you said. And we've I have a duck quacking. We have gone so far in this direction. I mean, there is a trade-off. It is not just we need to be safe at all costs. You know, yes, okay.
Well, have fun in that bubble.
There's a risk that somebody is going to, you know, sneak a bomb onto the plane. And yes, I would like to do things to avoid that. I don't want to blow up. But you have to balance off whatever level of inconvenience you're putting with the actual potential cost. And it adds up very quickly. If you inconvenience the millions and millions and millions of people who fly, you know, the amount of time lost, the amount of productivity lost, even as was pointed out in one study after 9/11 that I like to bring up every few months or years, more people probably died in the year after 9/11 because they chose to drive on their trips rather than take a plane.
Oh, yeah.
Than did in 9/11 itself.
Yep.
Because by making air travel harder, you shift people's preferences. And yes, less people may die in the air due to planes being hijacked or blown up, but more people die overall. So yes. You're not actually helping things. You're shifting around the problem and you're potentially making it worse. And that's what these things seem to say to me is, you know, especially this kind of thing, like, okay, fine. You have everybody walk through a damn metal detector on the way to the plane. It's a pain in the ass, but, you know, and yes, even when you add up all that time, but like actually taking and making the already bad experience of being in the plane itself and making it worse, I think that's honestly the reason they've hesitated on pulling the trigger on this is they realize what the backlash would be.
My friends with kids are horrified. My friends who regularly internationally travel with kids and they're like, do you want my child to go through a flight without an iPad? No, no one does. Trust me.
Yes. Okay. I think that's a show. Thank you very much for joining us again, Jen.
Thank you. Thanks for putting up with the pop music in the background.
Yeah, yeah. You know. It gives a different flavor. It's like we're chatting in the lounge.
Sure, we'll go with that. And I'll just say that it made me a bit more curmudgeonly because I was not so fond of it. And so I just fit right in.
You've always been a curmudgeon, Jen.
You have to
enjoy your inner curmudgeon and let it out.
I'll keep that in mind.
Okay, thanks everybody for listening again. You know the usual drill. Go to us on Facebook, facebook.com/curmudgeonscorner. If you haven't already liked us, like us. If you have already liked us, comment on the show. Let us know your thoughts. Share the episodes with your friends. All of that lovely stuff. If you enjoy us a lot and want to help out, go to our Patreon, patreon.com/curmudgeonscorner, and throw us $1 a month or something. We'd appreciate it. And otherwise, tell your friends, review us on iTunes, all that lovely stuff. But most importantly, I guess, have a great week, and we'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.